welcome to the List Film Podcast. We are a weekly podcast. Wow, the energy is really low today. We're a weekly podcast where we pick a topic and then we list our top five films belonging to that.
Belonging to that topic
of the week. this week we're talking about best book to film adaptations. Correct. For the new listeners, we're four hosts who talk about films. I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
I'm Kevin.
This week we're talking about books to films. And did anybody have a hard time with that list? Apparently we were confused. Some of us were confused. I wasn't clear, I think, on whether you had to have read the book or not.
I don't think we ever said that you had to have read the book. I just used it to my advantage to make it easier to make this list. Because I'm like, all right, well, I'm not as well-read a person as I would like to be. So the number of books that have actually been made into movies that I've read is not that large. So it was easier to make that list.
Very cool.
I'm not much of a reader, so it was hard for me. I thought we had to have read them. That was me that he's talking about. And so my list was super small because I don't read, even though this was my idea for this topic. That was dumb, Jenny. Anyways,
You could have set your own rules. You could have set as any rules you want.
I know. I'm dumb.
She
it's
did.
Okay.
She wanted to put movies that she had read the book.
Only Curious George movies. Yeah.
Only Curious George movies, so two movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everyone's list is going to be two movies long.
It was just going to be a half hour talking about one movie, then half hour about another. So that is the topic for this week. We usually talk about movies we've seen. Did you guys see anything new in theaters?
Yes.
What did you see, Kevin?
I saw Jeff, who lives at home.
Oh, cool. How is that?
It's very good. I mean, the writing's great, and the acting is just terrific by everybody. I did get annoyed with the zooms, but then you do eventually ignore them. But it's an entertaining movie, and it's really well done.
Have you seen any of their other movies?
Puffy Chair. I like this more than Puffy Chair.
Yeah, Puffy Chair is my least favorite of their movies. I really like Jeff Lives at Home, and I really like Baghead, and Cyrus is okay.
And I've seen half of Cyrus. I haven't watched it all the way through.
I saw the one where I've seen a couple of their movies. I can't remember the titles, but I know that I saw the one where two friends are trying to sleep with each other. What is that one called?
Hump Day.
Hump Day.
He's just in that. That's not a Duplass Brothers movie.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a mumblecore movie, but it's not a Duplass movie.
Okay. Who's mumblecore?
That's that's what the genre that they give to like these type of indie films where they're somewhat improvised and they do all like natural lighting or lighting on the spot.
What is it called? Applecore?
Applecore, yeah. Applecore.
Stemcore. All right. So what else did anybody see, Adam?
I saw Wrath of the Titans.
Really?
Really?
I did. Yeah.
How was it?
It's okay. I mean, it's not terrible. It is what it is. If you saw Clash of the Titans and you were willing to go back to see Wrath of the Titans, then you probably got exactly what you wanted.
Well, is it a little better? Because Clash of the Titans was like, ugh. It was entertaining, but it was just like, ugh.
Did it become worse? Did it get worse than Clash?
I mean, they're both just kind of...
Whatever.
Well, yeah, they're like, that was a movie. That's over now. We can move on. I mean, they're not it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. They're entertaining for what they are. I mean, they play around with Greek myths in interesting ways.
Interesting.
I mean, it gets a little silly also when you've got Liam Neeson and Ralph Fiennes like, let's go have some fun. I was like, what are you talking about? I don't picture Zeus and Hades like, let's go fuck shit up. Let's just go start some shit. Because we're gods and we can do that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's that whole... But after what our fantasy week or whatever, was that last week?
Yeah.
Week before? After that, like rewatching fantasy movies, it kind of changed my whole perception of that genre. So it's kind of sillier now, looking back on it. So it's just another silly fantasy movie. I liked it better than Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Well, interesting. That's a weird thing to compare to. You liked it better than The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Well, that the newer shitty one? Like, not the awesome BBC Lion Witch. Like, I grew up watching the BBC Lion Witch and the Wardrobe movies, and those were all great. And then that new one, I just didn't buy it, which also had Liam Neeson in it as Aslan or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't like those.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, this was fun.
Yeah.
It's not a great movie, but it's entertaining. If you go into it knowing what to expect, you'll have an okay time.
Yeah, yeah. I'll probably see it. I like those stupid movies.
I was more willing to go see that than I was to go see Mirror Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Mirror Mirror just looks god awful.
I forgot that even came out this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm glad it didn't do well. But I am looking forward to The Huntsman and
Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah.
Looks really
good. That looks good.
Yeah.
I cannot confirm or deny that I saw the new Oliver Stone movie.
Oh, okay.
Savages. I can't say if I did or not. But if I had, I'd say that it was really fun. It was really different. it was different than anything. It's just him having fun. It felt like it wasn't like too preachy. You know, sometimes he gets really like, I'm political. I want to talk about issues. This was just fun, and there's some really good acting. Benicio del Toro is pretty amazing. He kind of plays the bad version of his character in Traffic.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it was cool to revisit that, but see the bad version of that. The bad guy version of that.
With Benicio del Toro, though, I mean, is he ever really the bad part of a movie?
No.
No.
Because,
no.
I mean,
ever.
At least he
ever.
Was. He carried me through Wolfman.
Yeah. He is always very, very...
what was that?
Not just entertaining, but he's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He does. I don't know what it is, but he's always engaging. Like
yes.
you always want to. We want more Benicio in movies.
What was The Hunted with Tommy Lee Jones?
Yeah.
The Hunted.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, also with Tommy Lee Jones again, it's like even Tommy Lee Jones in a bad movie, I'll watch Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
But what was that? Excess Baggage, that movie he did Benicio del Toro did with Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah. And it was filled with people. Who else was in it? The guy, Aaron Johnson or Johnston? The guy from Kick-Ass?
Johnson.
Yeah. Johnson.
He was really good. And the guy from Friday Night, Taylor Hitch.
Taylor Kitsch?
Yeah. The guy from John Carter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was really good in this. The last few things that I've seen, I'm like, they left me wanting more from him. Like, because he's just like, I'm like, if he's going to be a leading man, it's not warranted. You know, for what he's bringing, but this one he was really, really good, and it was packed with really good acting. The Damian Bichir.
I mean, you think it was because you didn't actually see it.
Yeah, I think it was.
Neither confirm nor deny.
I can't confirm or deny.
It may or may not have been awesome.
Yeah, it may or have, yeah, and it was just fun. It was a fun movie, and
when does that one come out?
I think summer. Oh, okay. Yeah, and then. Well, the girl, Blake Lively, I think, is in it, too, I think. So she's not bad to look at. I'll tell you that right now. That's all I saw. Jenny, did you see anything this weekend?
No, I have not. And now I'm slacking.
What's wrong with you?
Stupid work.
Yeah. Jeez.
You should just quit.
I know.
I mean, if it's not letting you see movies.
I hope no one you work with is listening to this.
No.
So should we move on to the stream of the week? Somebody has a stream of the week. Netflix stream of the week.
I think we've got two this week.
We've got two, yeah.
What are they?
Go ahead. You go first, Kevin.
I noticed today that they just added Days of Heaven.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Nice. That is very cool. They awesome. Went Car Y, right?
No. Days of Heaven,
Terrence Malick.
Terrence Malick. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Your favorite?
Yeah, that's, that's why I figured we would throw it out there.
What am I thinking of? The Car Y film?
Days of Wine and Roses.
That's right. Sorry. Yes, Days of Heaven, the Richard Gere film. Yes. I just got it on
Blu-ray. Yeah, you have it on Blu-ray.
Did I get that as a present?
Yeah, I gave it to you as a present.
Oh, that's right.
I feel like we need to give you a shot of adrenaline to your heart or something.
I know, just, dude.
Like,
sorry,
get you centered.
Sorry.
I'm right there with you, too. It's just you're running the show, so.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Today was it's low energy. Well, I was up till 7 a.m. editing a short film I'm doing, so I slept for a little bit, and I'm running low on my go-go juice.
I think you need a five-hour energy. You got that 2:30.
You know what? I do have a 2-hour. Maybe a five-hour energy drink will be one of our sponsors. Like, hey, do you want to pep up? Drink up a five-hour energy drink. So, What are the Netflix streams that you guys are talking about? So yours is
Days of Heaven.
And then Big Time, which is a Tom Waits concert, which is on, it's on streaming right now. It's kind of amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's so much fun. It's like, it's under the documentary category, but it's a Tom Waits concert when he was touring, I think, after Rain Dogs or Swordfish Trombones or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But it's so much fun because it's not just a con. It's a show.
Yeah.
And he's crazy looking. He's got like a little pencil mustache going on. It's trippy. It's fun to watch. Yeah. You should check it out.
I think Kevin's been to the, have you been to the play? The Eric Edwards play? You saw early versions,
yeah,
right?
I've seen early versions of it.
Well, I'm doing a play with Jonathan Libnicki, and we did a performance on Saturday. And I'm just directing it. I'm not in it. And it's filled with Tom Waits music, and it's called A Mixtape. So it kind of, it's cool that every time I don't do the play and then I go back to it, or I'm reminded like, oh, Tom Waits is really effing awesome. I, you know, and I don't own enough of his music, I feel. So
yeah,
we'll have to remedy that.
Yeah, I'll have to check out this documentary, which is weird because it's under documentary and not music.
Yeah,
section.
Well, I mean, on Instant, at least on my Blu-ray player, they don't have a music section. It's under the documentary.
Oh,
section.
Okay. I
and it's more, it's not even, it's just a concert, like, it's a show, it's a performance, because he, like, him and his co-writer, and his also wife, Kathleen Brennan, I think it is, they just put on this whole show. There's, like, themes, and there's, like, little interludes with all these characters that he's playing. It's fun.
I heard him on NPR talking about, I think it was his last album, and how, I guess he records out of his home, and how he called Keith Richards to see if he'd come in and do some work on it. And he's like, yeah, just come over to my house. I record. And he's like, the day he was supposed to show up, a big old semi pulls up. And he's like, yeah, I brought my equipment. it was a full semi full of like guitars and like amps and all this stuff. And he's like, yep, there's just this little residential street with a big old semi with Keith Richards' equipment. And they literally recorded in a garage, so that was a funny story. So, all right, shall we get into it? Into the list.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Kevin, are you gonna start this list today?
Yep. I'm gonna do that.
You're really excited. I like that excitement. We should both have a five hour energy drink. The best drink out there.
I don't know about all that.
Well, I'm trying to get a sponsorship, dude.
How about Wild Turkey?
Ooh, that'll definitely pick you up.
You know what? I feel like we should do like liquors for our sponsors.
Yeah.
When I like going to the movies, I like drinking Jack Daniels.
When I come home at night, I like to sit down and enjoy a nice cold glass of Jameson.
There we go.
On a Sunday morning, we like to go to the movies and enjoy mimosas with Andre as
the champion. There we go. God. So we'll send this podcast out to all these liquor companies and see who sponsors us.
Oh my God.
All right.
Okay. Well, my list is kind of obvious.
My drink of choice on St. Patrick's Day is Irish car bombs with Guinness. Sorry.
So my list is kind of obvious, and some of the books I've read, some I haven't. So my number five is from 2000, and it's American Psycho. And this is one of the books I haven't read. I've read a bunch of other books from Bret Easton Ellis and love those books. I don't know. I think it's because I love the movie so much and I didn't like Rules of Attraction after I read the book. I don't want to taint it a little bit by reading the book, even though I love Bret Easton Ellis and I hear the book's great.
Yeah.
But the movie's phenomenal and Christian Bale is just, he's great. The scene where he is talking about Huey Lewis in the news and he's wearing the rain jacket and just the way he plays it, where he's kind of being comedic, slapsticky, just he's losing it at the moment, is just, it's a great scene and he's just phenomenal.
It's funny. Jenny and I host another podcast. That's exactly, it's the sister podcast of this. It's the List Music Podcast. And last week's episode was about music in film. And there was two songs from American Psycho that we talked about.
Spoiler alert.
I know, spoiler alert. Well, the episode's up today, so.
And it isn't. I tried to go to iTunes. And
really?
Yeah.
Well, I must have just uploaded that then. But yeah, so we talked about that scene about how it's so cool because he's giving this really great long monologue, but he's setting up the tarp and he's putting on the rain jacket and he's getting the axe and he's really passionate about like Huey Lewis in the News and about their first album. And like, it's really, really a great performance.
And he's playing, he's not playing like a killer. You don't think, okay, yeah, he's throwing on the rain jacket and he's got the newspapers down and obviously he's going to kill him.
Yeah.
But the way he's playing, he's just so excited about talking about Huey Lewis in the News and he's just going into full detail and he's playing it almost like this upbeat, like preppy idiot, but he's getting ready to kill Jared Leto.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking in the other podcast about how like a lot of people were disappointed when they first saw this movie, and because they went in thinking, oh, this is gonna be an awesome thriller and it's gonna be like this slasher movie, and it was a great satire and
yeah,
amazingly funny. And that's my line when he's like, where were you today? I was returning some videotapes.
I said that to somebody the other day, and I was like, oh, I just said that. It was a weird moment where it's like, I got to go. I have to go away now. Because I said that, and I felt kind of dirty.
That was his excuse every time.
Yeah.
His alibi was, where were you this night?
I've got to return some videotapes.
I believe I was returning some videotapes. So, yeah, great number five pick.
So is that to me now?
Yes.
Everyone's looking at me.
Yeah. We're judging you.
My number five is from 2007. And, I mean, it's a short story, but whatever. It's The Mist.
Ooh.
Mm. Nice.
Ooh. Kevin might have something bad to say about this.
I know. I love 95% of that movie except for the ending.
You don't like the ending?
I don't. Because I love the short story's ending. And I love the way it ended and kind of where it leaves it open-ended. And I hate how... It doesn't seem like there's any build up to the ending. It just kind of happens. And then just the way it really ends, where the military comes in, I hated that as well.
I loved it. You know, Stephen King loved that ending,
too. Yeah, I know he did. But Stephen King doesn't... Whenever he tries to write a movie, it sucks, usually. So stick to writing books.
He didn't write this, though.
I know. But I'm just saying, when he says that a movie ending's good, I'm not going to say, okay, well, it's Stephen King. He's an awesome writer.
But he didn't say that it was the movie ending that was good. He said he wished he had ended the book like that.
Yeah, I know.
The story. I don't know.
But I love 95% of the movie, but I just don't like the ending.
I feel like it just perfectly ended my evening because I went and saw The Mist by myself on Thanksgiving.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
But I loved it. I was like, that was awesome. That was a really, like, I just had a messed up Thanksgiving just on my own just because I felt like making it weird.
Well, you messed up your own Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It wasn't like anything bad happened. I was like, I'm just going to mess it up myself because I can. It was my birthday. I can do whatever I want.
You know what? Have you seen the Blu-ray black and white version of it?
Yeah, though
it's really good.
I saw it in theaters. It was a color version. I was like, that was.
Wait, it's the same movie but black and white?
Yeah.
Originally, Darabont wanted to do it in black and white, but the studio, it was like, all right, you can either have that ending or you can have it in black and white, but you can't have both.
Oh.
And then so for the DVD, they released the special edition and the Blu-ray edition. You can watch the black and white version, which makes it 10 times better.
Really? Yeah, I bet.
Because it feels...
The effects work so much better.
Oh, yeah. It sells the effects. But then also, on top of that, it feels more like the 60s sci-fi horror movies that it's kind of paying homage to. Mm-hmm. And it also, when you're inside the store with the people going crazy, it reminds me of footage from the 60s of like the civil rights movement and sit-ins and whatnot. And it just adds all these other levels to the movie. So if you haven't seen The Mist, go see it and watch the black and white version.
Yeah.
Thomas Jane is great. Laurie Holden. Well, it's Frank Darabont directing, so you've got a bunch of people that you've seen on Walking Dead now. Laurie Holden, Jeffrey DeMunn. She plays Carol. She's on it. She's got one of the best parts.
Oh,
She goes to the. She goes to get her kids out in the mist.
Oh,
that's right. Yeah.
And is asking for help, and no one will help her.
No one will help her.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Melissa Suzanne McBride. She's really good.
The guy from the Vampire Show. Being Human is in that too, the vampire guy.
I have no idea.
The American?
Yeah, the American version of it. Yeah, not Sam Worthington, but the other guy.
He's Sam Witwer?
Yeah, I think that's him.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's got a bunch of people in it.
Yeah.
Marcia Gay Harden.
Yeah, she's great. Good.
She's one of the scariest parts of this movie.
Yeah.
Scarier than the monsters. Toby Jones is great. I love this movie so much.
I do.
And I did really like the story. I read the story afterwards. I think it's in. Four is it 4 Past Midnight or 5 Past Midnight?
I want to say four, five. Jeez, I forget.
Something Past Midnight by Stephen King. It's a short story in this collection, and it's really great. It's I also read it
after I saw the movie, and it definitely. I know Kevin was a big fan of the short story, and I think that's why I like the film better, because I saw it first, and then it made more sense to me that you just kind of had to do that way. But
it's the ballsiest ending ever.
How does the story end? The short story.
Well, it's him. He's telling that he's so it ends with him like writing down what everything happened on a note, and they're in a hotel, and then they get into a car and drive off, and you can see creatures around, and they're just kind of, and that's how it ends.
Okay.
Much more open ended.
Yeah. Much more lighthearted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have minded that ending, but I felt there was no build up to it. I felt they just gave up right away, and there wasn't like, okay, now I have to do this. And I would have loved it more, but it was kind of just like, I need to wrap this movie up, so I need to do this ending that I want to do, and I need to, it just kind of happened.
Yeah, it was kind of all of a sudden.
I don't know. I didn't feel,
because I didn't feel like hope had been, like they had given up hope at all.
That huge giant creature just walked across the pathway. And they knew what they had gone through when they were in a store, and now they're stuck in a car in the middle of nowhere.
I don't know. It didn't come across to me.
I don't know.
I mean, I dug it. I dug the ending.
Definitely. I saw where it was going.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like it also adds to like the subtext of that whole story, where like the whole faith and whatnot, and these are the people who didn't have the faith of the group, which was crazy, but at the same time, at least the group had the faith to cling to. I don't know. It's all these weird layers. I liked it. I understand why people don't.
They just waited 5 minutes.
Yeah. You know?
Yep.
Gosh. And then the vacuum would have come and sucked away the mist.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. The giant Spaceballs type vacuum.
Yep.
God, yeah, that was a good movie. I need to watch that again.
Yeah. Watch it in black and white. I have the Blu-ray, so check it out. Yeah, that's a good choice. Good list so far.
Jenny? Oh, and Andre Brower and William Sadler.
That's right.
So many people in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so I went with things that I've read, actually. So that might, I don't know. I mean, they're all still good. Okay, anyways. So my number 5 is Lord of the Flies.
Ooh. That's a good one.
It's a really good book. I was forced to read it in school, but it ended up being something that I actually enjoyed. And then we watched the movie in school, too. There's two versions, I guess. I've watched the 63 version. I don't think I watched the 90s version.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I have or not, but that one's in color, and I know I watched black and white, the black and white version. So I'm assuming it's the earlier version. But yeah, it's a really good story in general. It's really interesting. I don't know. I really like the whole stranded and kids killing each other thing, I guess. Yeah.
I think I have an idea what might be showing up later on this list.
So for my number 5, I picked... I picked Jurassic Park.
Nice.
I saw the movie first, then I read the book, and it was one of those things where I'm like, I love this movie. How could it make it better? Well, I'll read the book. And it was more expansive, and like, there was... I definitely know... Like, there, if it wasn't for the crappy part 3 and part 2, like, there was such great hope for, like, the sequels. Like, because they only, like, took part of the first book. So there's not only, like the last, you know, a lot of chunks that they missed from the first book, but the Lost World book, which is the second book. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, I really enjoyed it. And I thought, even apart from the book, it was just a great movie, and I love it. Spielberg, and it's got great effects. They still hold up. We just watched it last Sunday, and the effects still kind of hold up. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. So that is my number 5. Simple.
I found out the other day while I was at the museum that I work at the Natural History Museum of LA, and I found out that we actually have a one of the velociraptors that they used in the movie for like placing purposes, I guess, in the museum, but they don't want to put it out on display because it's so much bigger than the real velociraptors that it's like 3 times bigger than real velociraptors. And so they don't have it out anywhere because there's nowhere to really put it.
And it's inaccurate.
But it's so it's like in collection somewhere, but it's like what the stand in, I guess.
Yeah. Like for the special effects.
Yeah.
Velociraptor stand in.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was pretty neat.
I wonder how heavy it is.
I know.
Yeah.
I wish I could see. I mean, how big were they in the movie?
They weren't that big. I mean, from
as tall as a little boy, right?
A little taller than the boy.
Yeah. Maybe the little the girl. Then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apparently, velociraptors are way smaller than that.
Really?
Yeah, well, that's three times bigger than how big they really are, is what I was told.
Well, I felt like as the movies went on, they got a little bigger. Because I know, like, in the third one, it's as high as, like, Sam Neill. And so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they'll still, you know, kill you, but
they just
they're not that big.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if you think about it, I guess.
Evil.
Yeah, yeah. There's,
I mean, just one of those claws lion. Going across your belly and your guts spilling out as they eat it. While you're still alive.
Yeah. I mean, mountain lions aren't that tall, but they'll still...
Yeah. One of the worst dinosaurs in that movie was the ones that spit on you.
Oh.
And Dilophosaurus?
Yeah. Those are terrible.
Yeah. Because not only do you get eaten, but they spit at you.
Yeah.
And it's like acid.
And it like burns. Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Injury. You can't see.
Yeah, I know. It's like I spit at your face and then I'll kill you.
Yeah. At least with T-Rex, just eat you.
Poor one Wayne bite.
I know.
I saw Jurassic Park before I ever watched Seinfeld, so I could never hate Newman that much. I'm like, that poor guy got eaten by a velociraptor. Give him some, cut him some slack.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and the original book was written. The original book, was written by, of course, Michael Crichton. And it's funny because I remember watching the Jurassic Park movie and thinking, this feels a lot like another movie I've seen. I don't know what it is. And then I later on, as I grew up, I'm like, I know what it is, Westworld, which Mike Crichton wrote and directed, by the way.
I didn't know he directed Westworld.
Yeah. 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 The only thing he's ever directed.
That movie made me terrified of Yul Brynner.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, it's funny because I love Westworld, and that's a good movie. I'm surprised they haven't remade it. It's a really good movie.
So I'm guessing Westworld is not going to be on your list then?
No, no. And that is my number five, Jurassic Park.
Okay, so my number four comes from 1971, and it's A Clockwork Orange.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's probably my favorite Kubrick, but it is hard to watch. I mean, Alex and his friends do some fucked up shit, and just some of those scenes are just really uncomfortable to watch, and especially taking something like Singing in the Rain and singing it while you're raping a woman and just beating up her husband is just, it's brilliant. I mean, Kubrick
on
is
film,
a genius,
yeah.
But it's just, it's awful and hard to watch. Malcolm McDowell he's great. Just looking in his eyes, I can understand why Heath Ledger studied A Clockwork Orange to play the Joker, because obviously the character of Alex is just, he's an amazing sociopath.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the ones that I read, but I read it probably like 2 years after I saw the movie. And I mean, Kubrick does a really good job of actually staying pretty close to the book. I think the only thing that I can remember him changing was he definitely changed the ending. The ending in the book is a little bit more positive, and Alex has changed his character. He's not the guy who's still a sociopath in the end, at the end of the movie. But I think the movie is beautiful. I mean, just the images he gets, the use of music and slow motion, and some of the scenes are just fantastic. Or you just use the music and then speeding up the shots, and just what he does with the camera to tell a story is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I love this movie. I just haven't read the book, and I was sticking to books that I've read. So, but yeah, it's a great movie. I just watched it again before we did last week's episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, nice. I watched it again over the summer. But it'd been a while since I'd seen it the first time, so I almost, like, it's not that I had forgotten, because you don't forget, but it was just like, wait, I gotta, I feel like there's something else more to this that I can't remember. I was like, that's why I haven't seen it that long. I saw somebody, I can't remember who, someone posted on Facebook, they dressed their kid up like him for Halloween. I was like, are you serious?
That's crazy.
This kid doesn't even know what he's getting into.
That's a whole other kind of programming.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I'd want to program my child to become Alex.
So number four, from 2006, Children of Men.
Awesome.
I bet that'd be a really good book to read.
It's an okay book.
The movie's better?
Is way better.
Really?
The movie really only takes character names and the fact that women can't have babies anymore.
Okay.
That's really the only similarity is that
the basic plot.
Yeah. It's a very, very different story. more about the resistance and trying to have this child and kind of usurping the government, and not so much about getting to the group of scientists.
Yeah.
It's not really about that at all. It's a very, very different story. The movie is much, much more of an action thriller, and the book is more of like a political drama thriller.
Well, I feel like the movie is a political, also the political action movie. I mean, not action. It's a political movie as well, but in a different sense.
Well, it's more about. Okay, well, when I'm saying political, I'm talking about like people in.
Against.
Okay, so I gotta go with the Eddie Izzard reference, like people opening doors and going like, "Oh, hello, Lieutenant Sebastian."
Hmm.
Like, so I'm
busy arranging matches.
All the President's Men.
I guess so. Sure. Not. I don't know. Like, there was never. There's a sense of urgency and like this kind of impending doom in the movie that's not quite as present in P.D. James' book. Like, I like the book and it's interesting, but it's very, very different. Whereas with the movie, you've got, it's more of an immediate threat, and you've got Alfonso Cuarón doing amazing visual things with this great cast and the great music that he's using. I love the score, like some of the Penderecki music that he's using, and he just kind of envelopes us in this dystopian world so quickly. And it seems even worse than the world set up in the book. I mean, the book does have some interesting moments, which kind of remind me of Clockwork Orange as far as like people being out of it and crazy. In the world, in the book, women have resorted to pushing dolls around like babies, and it's really creepy.
Well, like, that like would life be really size creepy to see.
Babies and dolls, and like treating it like it's a person because they can no longer have a child. But I read the book afterwards, and maybe if I'd read it before, I wouldn't have liked the movie as much. So I'm glad I saw the movie first, because I love this movie so much. Clive Owen's great.
Yeah.
Julianne Moore, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Everyone.
Danny Houston.
Yeah. Danny Houston, Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I always heard he's in that.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Yeah, he just stands out so much because he's so lovable in that movie.
But they're very, 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 again, very, very different. Like, if you had read the book and they had released Children of Men, the movie, as a different title, you wouldn't be like, oh, hey, they stole the idea for women can't have children, and that's it. Because they're very, very different.
And this movie, I've been saving it. I'm glad you brought it up, and I didn't bring it up. I've been saving it... because it's just such a good movie, just period. It's an amazing movie. It could fit in so many genres, like, you know, dystopian futures. It just fits in all kinds of genres. And like I said, I feel like the politics, I haven't read the book, but I felt like there was like a political theme to it, but it was different. It was more about like immigration stuff.
Yeah.
Illegal immigration. And it was such so well done, well acted, and
the cinematography is some of the greatest cinematography ever.
Yeah,
it's there's nothing in the book that approaches that car scene where they're attacked on the road.
Yeah,
there's no moment that you're like, oh, what just happened? But I mean, granted, it's a different medium, but still, the book never kind of sucks you in like that one scene in this movie does, or even the opening scene of the movie where he's getting coffee and they make the announcement.
Yeah,
and
Oh yeah, that's it's funny because they added that little like what's it called, that high pitch frequency, and for a while the explosion happens and you feel what he's feeling because of that high pitch frequency. You're like, oh man, I can't hear Jack.
Yeah, that's not in the book,
and it's all one take as well.
Yeah,
I remember this movie was Kevin and I have a yearly Christmas tradition where we go to the movies on Christmas Day, and this was our downer movie for Christmas one year. which I felt like we almost tried to go again the same day.
I think
we couldn't get tickets. It was sold out.
I think I did. I went. I was working at a movie theater at the time. Saw the movie, went home, got the soundtrack and the score, went to the bookstore, got the book, started reading the book, and then went back to work and watched the movie again.
Yeah,
it was that good.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Have you seen it, Jenny?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
That's another one where you can come in almost any part of the movie and like start watching it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
That's really good. Oh, okay. My turn. Okay. My number four is To Kill a Mockingbird.
Ooh.
Awesome movie.
Another one I had to read for school, but, but yeah, it's a really good movie and a really good book and a really good story in general. All of it is good. It's 1962's To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah, I love this, everything about it. Did any of you have to read it?
I read for school too.
Yeah.
I never really read anything we were supposed to read in high school. I just kind of
spark notes it.
I just kind of bullshit my way through it.
You just watched the movie?
Well, no, even then, like I feel like To Kill a Mockingbird was an honors class, and I was a lazy kid, and I didn't take honors classes.
Oh yeah.
So you guys got to read like To Kill a Mockingbird. Meanwhile, I had to read like Bless Me Ultima. Thanks,
Fall
Apart.
I don't even know what that
is. I remember reading like some great. It's funny, like now, you know, growing up, and I mean, I had to read those books. And as a kid, I wasn't a reader. I didn't like love reading until I got out of high school. But I remember finishing books and being like, that would be an amazing movie. Oh, wait a minute. It is a movie. And then it was really great to be like, oh, I was forced to read this book, but now I get to see it. And it was really satisfying. And then, yeah. So I remember seeing this, which I like the performance. Gregory Peck is amazing, but I'm not a big of a fan as other books I got to read in high school. Like, I remember I got to read Fahrenheit 451.
I
went and saw the François Truffaut film, and I really loved it. I thought it was good. Cool.
We didn't have to read that one, but I wish we had.
Yeah, it's a really cool.
That's the only reason I read was if I was forced to.
Yeah, but it's funny. I think that's why in high school my favorite class was history, because it was like you could read history as like movies. And that's the way I got through.
We watched a lot of movies in my history class.
Really?
Yeah, we did too.
We watched like Inherit the Wind. We watched.
Really?
We watched. We watched a movie that's going to be on my list, so I can't say it right now.
We watched Inherit the Wind, but we watched it for English class.
Okay.
I think because we had to read the play.
Okay. So we were learning about the Stokes Monkey Trial, so we watched Inherit the Wind.
You saw the original.
The original.
Because then there
Gene
was
Kelly.
Okay. Yeah.
Spencer Tracy.
Yeah. Great. And then. Jack Lemmon was really, really good also in the remake, or the second version of it, I guess you'd call it.
Remake,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that was your number four?
Mm-hmm.
My number four is a book from, when did this come out? 1972. I didn't read it then because it wasn't born yet, but I read it after I saw the movie, and the movie I'm talking about is First Blood, Rambo. It's not called Rambo. It's just called First Blood.
Right.
I really loved this movie as a kid. Loved it. And then when I got old enough, I'm like, wait a minute. There's a effing book? I got to read this thing. And I read it. And it was really cool. I was really disappointed by the ending because it was different from the movie. But spoiler alert, Rambo dies in the book. He's killed by Troutman. As much as I loved Rambo First Blood Part 2, and I was excited that they made a sequel and then it came off, but I kind of really enjoyed the ending of the book, the fact that he was killed by Troutman, actually. And it's a really good book.
Having just seen the movie, I could see that. That makes sense.
Yeah, like the guy who trained you kind of has to take you down.
I don't want to step on anyone else's toes, so I hope this isn't on anyone else's list, but that makes me think of Mice and Men, where it's like rather...
Yeah.
You do it than someone else.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the movie takes place like in Oregon, I think. Like, and the book is in Kentucky, so that was like a big difference. Yeah,
but it has a whole different level to it also. Because that was one of my biggest things. I'm like, people in Oregon aren't this douchey, are they?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the people in Kentucky are that douchey either. In case you have some listeners there.
I don't want to offend anyone in Kentucky. I love Kentucky. I love the bourbon. But, I mean, I feel like at that time period after, I don't know. Yeah, seeing someone who looks more like a hippie.
I think Oregon would be more, more open accepted. To that.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like where he would go and be accepted.
Be like, yeah, I'm going to open up a
I'm sorry, Kentucky. I don't mean to. I love Kentucky. Justified's one of my favorite shows. I love Wild Turkey.
Yeah.
I would love to go to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
I really would love to do that. That would be awesome.
And dress up in a white suit?
Hang out and drink mint juleps all day.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wear a big-ass hat.
Some of my favorite people are from Kentucky. Hunter Thompson.
Hmm.
Johnny Depp.
That's right.
Raylan Givens.
That's another book that I read because of the movie.
Does the book have the awesome line in it?
Which one? The
God didn't create Rambo, I did.
No, it doesn't. That's a great line, man.
It is. I want that on a t-shirt.
He's like, who is this guy? He's like, oh, God. He's like, God didn't greet Rambo. I did. He's like, who are you? Troutman. It's a great movie. Brian Dennehy's amazing. And such a douchebag. And what's his name? David Caruso's in it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Rambo breaks his nose.
Yeah.
Well, I just love Richard Crenna so much.
Yeah. He's pretty awesome. I loved him. Even though Rambo 3 was I really liked him in it because he got to fight.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I also like seeing when he gets to be funny, like in Hot Shots.
Yeah.
Part.
So that is my number four, First Blood.
Okay. My number three is from 1996, and it's Trainspotting.
Ooh, I almost had that on my list, but I knew you were going to.
I didn't know that was a book, actually. Yep. Really?
There's another book, the sequel.
Yeah, there's a sequel to it.
Really? Which
Danny Boyle keeps.
He says he wants to do it.
Yeah, I went to see a Q&A with him, and I read it in interviews where he says he wants to do it. But I think Johnny Lee Miller has to get a little older. Both Johnny Lee Miller and Ewan McGregor.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, wow.
They have to be a little older for it to work. So.
Than they are now?
Yeah.
Really? Just a little bit.
Okay.
So.
Well, I would see that.
Yeah.
I haven't read the book yet. I've started.
I haven't read the book either, but.
Yeah.
The movie is amazing.
Yes.
And everybody's great in it. Johnny Lee Miller, Ewan McGregor, Ewan Bremmer, Robert Carlyle. Everybody is.
This was a play also, right? Because didn't Ewan Bremmer play.
Yes, they did turn in. It was a play before it was a movie.
Yeah. He played Mark Renton in the play.
But when they cast the movie,
okay,
they put him as Spud.
Who's the other guy? Dylan Kidd? Dylan McKidd? The guy from...
Kevin McKidd.
Kevin McKidd, yeah. He's great in that, too.
Yeah.
With the cat. Ugh.
Yeah.
There's so many awesome moments. I never, did you read the book?
I haven't.
Oh, okay. No, it's... That's one of those books where I'm like, I really, really want to read it because there's such great moments in the movie that... One of my favorite scenes is when he goes to the job interview.
Yes, and he takes speed beforehand.
I feel like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon stole that scene and put it in. I mean, they're not high, but it's a very awkward job interview as well.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Do you have any? What does he ask him? Do you have any? What is it? Bad qualities? What are your?
What does he say?
He's a What are some negative things about you? He's like, nothing. He's like, one thing.
I'm kind of a perfectionist.
Yeah, and it's just so awkward to listen to the thing. And I love also Robert Carlyle when he's telling a story about the pool incident.
The pool incident where he's hungover.
Yeah, and it went totally different than what he said.
And then he chucks a glass over the side and it hits a girl in the head.
That's my... Oh, man.
There's something... Like, I love the movie, but I don't know if it just comes to life more on film than it did on the book. Because I've tried reading the book once, and I feel like something... Watching and hearing the dialogue delivered in that Scottish accent is easier than reading the dialect in the book. Because it's written in dialect, and it's really tough.
Wow.
Same reason I haven't read Clockwork Orange, because I'm like, I don't want to deal with learning all these words. Yeah. All of these made-up lingo. I'm lazy.
Yeah, Clockwork Orange took me a while because of that. But I think that's the reason why I haven't read Trainspotting, because everybody I've heard... talked to his Reddit said it can be difficult to read because of the fact that it's in the dialect.
Wow.
Yeah. But I mean, this movie definitely, if I had any inkling of ever trying heroin, this movie definitely turned me off, because when his parents lock him in his room and he starts having nightmares and that scene with the baby crawling on the ceiling is just awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That much parodied scene.
Yes.
Yeah. Also the scene where he has to go in the toilet.
Oh,
to get a suppository.
That scene, I mean, just watching Ewan during that scene where he's sticking his hand in the toilet and he's gagging, and just how dirty that toilet is.
Yeah,
it's one of the best most entertaining anti-drug movies, because Requiem for a Dream doesn't make me want to do drugs either, but I also don't ever want to watch it again. Yeah. Whereas I can watch Trainspotting over and over again and watch him plunge to the literal depths that he does plunge to when he imagining going to the bottom of the toilet, and it's depressing cautionary tale, but fun to watch.
It's a
weird combination.
It is. It is, and it's so entertaining. And you would, I don't ever mind, like, hey, let's put on Trainspotting. Yeah, let's do it. Where Working for a Dream, you're like, no, I'm good. I gotta do some laundry. I'm gonna go home. Like, I'm never in the mood for that movie. I don't own it for that reason, just because it puts me in a bad place. Mm-hmm. And even though I like sad and things, that just puts me in a whole, totally different ballpark.
You know it's bad if it puts you in a dark place.
That's true.
Yeah. So, good pick.
Yeah. You should find people that have read it to see how different it is. From yeah.
The I know okay. Our friend Brian with a Y has read it.
Brian? So. Oh, okay. Yeah. Really? That's funny to me. Speaking of Kentucky, Kentucky just beat Kansas for the NCAA basketball championship.
Surprise,
woo,
surprise.
Kentucky. Mm. I don't know what that
thank
means.
You, AP Mobile. Okay, so number three.
Yep.
My number three is from 1992, and it is Malcolm X.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
This, okay, see, while we were being forced to read like all these books that you haven't heard of in high school, Bless Me, Ultima, and Things Fall Apart, I'm like, screw this. I'm going to go to the library and borrow the autobiography of Malcolm X.
So We had to read that.
Oh, that wasn't assigned reading.
Maybe if you're in AP English.
Yeah.
Well, I got to read it on my own and then have to discuss it with people who didn't
understand. No, just go to a ghetto school and then we have to read Malcolm X watch it like five times.
Okay. Well, we watched a little bit of it in my history class. I love the book.
That and Remember the Titans. Those are the two movies that we have to watch.
Really?
Yeah.
The abridged version of the Civil Rights Movement. Wow. Okay. It's an interesting teaching approach.
The Disney version of the Civil Rights
Movement. Exactly. Right.
I love the book, co-written by Alex Haley and Malcolm X. And then I just think Spike Lee perfectly captured this movie.
He did, except he put himself in it, which is the only blemish of the movie.
I'm okay with that. He's barely in it.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
He's barely in it. And I mean, he's Spike Lee. I just, when I was a kid, before I started watching Spike Lee movies, I always thought of Spike Lee as the Black Woody Allen because he just looked the same to me.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, I see Black Woody Allen because I didn't know I didn't know anything about either of them. I was just going based off looks alone, and to my child's mind, it's like, oh, Woody Allen, Spike Lee, they're just black and white versions of each other.
They're probably friends.
I love this movie so much. It's like over 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel that way to me. I can watch it. Like, it's a movie I can just watch halfway through, any point. I love this movie. Great cast. Denzel Washington, Angela Bassett, Delroy Lindo. I'm okay with Spike Lee's performance in the movie. Albert Hall. Al Freeman Jr. as Elijah Muhammad. I just kind of amuse myself when I was growing up, doing his voice, like, oh, it sounds like the boy's coming along. Because it's this weird, like, he's black, but he's got this weird accent where he sounds like he's like from the Middle East somewhere. It's very strange. Teresa Randall, so many great people in this movie. And Ernest Dickerson, I'm assuming he shot this because he's Ernest Dickerson and Spike Lee.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
I like it. I like it. Like you said, it doesn't feel like a three-hour movie.
No, it doesn't.
Well, yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel too long to me, and it doesn't feel like they left anything. It doesn't feel like they missed anything. Like, they touch on so many different elements through Malcolm X's life, and it's not, without having to make it a miniseries.
Yeah,
it's not, and with Alex Haley and Roots and whatnot, like, it could have easily been.
Yeah.
A miniseries, and they cram so much in there, and it's just such a great movie. And it's got one of my favorite uses of that Spike Lee floating
camera?
Tracking shot when he's coming down the street.
Yeah,
such a great movie.
Yeah, I also like, speaking of Malcolm X, I really liked Mario Van Peebles of Malcolm X
and
Ali.
Ali.
Yeah, it was really cool. I like that movie
for
as well.
all 5 minutes that he was in it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we are still number four, right?
Number three.
My number three. My number three is from 1971, and it's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I love that movie.
Ooh. Yes. It's been a while since I read the book, so I can kind of say that I read it, but mostly I just love the movie. It's the original one, by the way, 1971, not the Johnny Depp one. It's great. It's got an awesome cast. It's the coolest story from back then. I mean, every kid watched it. You didn't grow up not watching this movie. If you did, then you didn't have a childhood.
It's true.
I could see that.
It's awesome. I mean, it's everything great.
1-2 punch of Gene Wilder in a movie based on a book written by Roald Dahl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go wrong with that. I love Roald Dahl. Have you read Great Glass Elevator?
No.
It's like the sequel.
Oh, is it really?
I'm sure Tim Burton is probably got slated to make it some point in time.
Yeah.
I love Roald Dahl, and I love this movie. I love Gene Wilder. I feel like even a bad Gene Wilder movie is better than the best of other people's movies.
Yeah.
It's true.
He's great. I love Gene Wilder. I love the new condescending Wonka. All the memes for Wonka recently. They're so funny. They're like so sarcastic and hilarious. I follow Condescending Wonka now on Twitter because it's so funny. I should find some tweets and read them out loud. It's so funny. But yeah, I love this movie. It's pretty much a musical too. Did you like this even though it's kind of a musical?
Yeah, actually I did. Because of Gene Wilder.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I really love Gene Wilder. Yeah. The scene on the boat is so freaking creepy. Yeah. I hated the
scene on the boat.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. This is another movie where it's kind of creepy. Not as bad, you know. Like I've talked about before, I have a problem with Alice in Wonderland and like Dumbo and Wizard of Oz. This was almost in that because of that creepiness factor. What year did this movie come out? Do you
71.
Know? I think that's like the 70s. Something about those weird colors or something that kind of take me to a dark place.
And the Oompa Loompas.
Yeah.
I had a friend that dressed up like an Oompa Loompa for school for something. It was the weirdest thing. No, he's like tall, but he dyed himself orange, and he like dyed his hair green, and like it was ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, he was one of those kids.
That's dedication.
That is dedication.
You know those kids.
Yeah. For my number three, I picked a book that inspired a trilogy, and now a fourth movie. And I'm talking about Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Identity. I think before this movie came out, I read this. One of my cousins had read it, and he's like, it's really good, check it out. And then I start reading it, and it's a really good book. The book is more about, from what I remember, I think it's like Vietnam. And it goes into, I think the sequels might go into the Cold War. I don't remember, but I remember it was really in depth, and the, especially The Bourne Identity. As much as I enjoyed the movie, the book was so in depth about, you know, the characters, like the girl he meets, like, in The Bourne Identity, mm-hmm. she's smarter than Franca Potente. Yeah, Potente. Her character in the book is like she's smarter than Jason Bourne.
Okay,
and Jason Bourne's smart, and and there was this whole storyline with Clive Owen's character Carlos from The Bourne Identity. His character in the book is like really in depth, and he's kind of like the main nemesis and like this great villain.
It's been such a long time since I've even seen the first movie.
Yeah. Their stuff, I mean, based on all three movies that they've done, they haven't even gone past the first book. So there's so much, there's a wealth of cool stories left in like the two other books.
Wow.
And even from The Bourne Identity, they haven't done a lot of the stuff. So them going and I also love what Tony Gilroy did with all of them. And I'm glad he's doing the Bourne Legacy because he's doing his own thing. But I feel like I know where he's pulling out of, and it's from the Bourne Identity book. That there's some sort of there's stuff in there that he could pull from for the legacy and stuff, because there was other guys that were in the program.
Interesting. Well, I love the movies, and yeah. I'm excited about the new one. I like Jeremy Renner, and it looks pretty fun.
Yeah, you should definitely check out the books, and it's really well done.
I don't think I've ever read any Robert Ludlum.
The Bourne Identity is a good one to start with because it's really fun and a great espionage thriller. Yeah. So that's it. And I'm really looking forward to The Bourne Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
Okay. So my number two is from 1999 and it's Fight Club.
I want to read this book so bad.
The book is very good. I love the movie. Yeah. But I also love Chuck and all his books, Lullaby, Choke. They're all terrific.
You guys are on a first name basis now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have like brunch every Saturday, so sweet. I figure I can call him Chuck.
Up in Portland?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
He has that book where he writes about all the different things you can do in Portland, doesn't he?
Yeah, I haven't read it.
Naked Mile Run?
Yeah. But this movie is terrific. I saw the movie before I read the book, but Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, Helena Bonham Carter, everybody in this movie is great. And David Fincher's direction throughout the film is awesome. I feel that the way the film was paced and what he had done with the movie, because when I was doing research about this list and reading about the movie and finding out what they really wanted to do, and they didn't want to have voiceover in the film because they thought it was trite and overused in most films. And then Fincher came in and said, no, that's where the humor comes from. So I want to have the voiceover in it. just realizing what he was able to make the film into. And then it's just, it's awesome. I just love this movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's Down and Dirty Pictures or there's a book after Down and Dirty Pictures about this sort of school of directors that he was a part of. I don't think it's Down and Dirty Pictures. I think it's a different book. But they talk about him and like P.T. Anderson.
Okay.
And the guy that did Three Kings.
Oh, the guy did The Fighter. I can't think of his name.
David O. Russell.
David O. Russell. Yeah.
So they're talking about them, but they talk about a lot about making Fight Club and how like just how bizarre it is that it got made.
Yeah.
And I love this movie, and it is an honorable mention, and I do enjoy the book. I like the movie better than the book.
Yeah.
One of the few instances. It's the only Chuck Palahniuk book I've read. I've never read Choke. I've never read anything else that he's done.
Yeah, this was on my honorable mention list, and I knew you were going to bring it up.
Well, I the more I watch this movie, the more I go, I love it. Yeah. If we were to do like our top five again, it wouldn't make the top five, but it would be one of my honorable mentions in like the top 10, because every time I watch, I'm like, oh, you know what? This is one of my favorite movies. I can just watch this movie all the time. It's my favorite Fincher film.
I feel like Brian is yelling at his iPod right now going, yes, Kevin is the right one right now.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to go jump off a cliff.
That's another movie we talked about in the film podcast. In musical moments, the Pixies at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, perfect use of that song.
Yeah, perfect use of music.
Okay, so number two. The year before your movie, 1998, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Ooh, nice.
I love this movie so much.
Yes.
Such a trip. Again, Johnny Depp, one of my favorite people from Kentucky, in a movie based on one of my other favorite people from Kentucky's books, Hunter S. Thompson. It's just so much fun. Terry Gilliam. Benicio del Toro again, who's always fun to watch, especially when he's playing the crazy Dr. Gonzo character. it's just, there's so much going on. Another movie with an awesome cast, just like all these people popping up. Tobey Maguire, Ellen Barkin, Gary Busey is a highway patrolman. Penn Jillette, just all these people just kind of popping up. Because I don't even know, like, because of their love for Hunter S. Thompson or their love for Terry Gilliam or just knowing people involved
I think
in the movie.
Some of those was their love for Las Vegas. I think Penn Jillette was his love for
Las
Vegas.
He's also in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah. He played the carnival with Barker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one with, next to the monkey.
Yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton. Flea's in it.
Yeah.
So many good people. And it's just such a fun, crazy trip that also makes me not really want to do drugs. Just because I'm too OCD for how dirty they get when they get into the depths of their binging on drugs.
Oh,
like waking up in the trashed hotel room that's filled to where they're wearing waders and they're needed.
Yeah.
You need to be wearing waders with your Godzilla tail attached to your,
to your pants.
Oh, and just like the smeared ketchup. It's just such an interesting look at this kind of period that might not have actually ever even existed. Just coming from Hunter S. Thompson's mind, I feel like this was as much as I love Where the Buffalo Roam, I feel like Terry Gilliam brought so much more to creating this world that Hunter S. Thompson saw.
Yeah. I think this, I mean, look at the music. Look at Jefferson Airplane. It just, this time period definitely, I mean, I was born in the 80s, but I definitely feel like, especially watching like documentaries about LSD and stuff like that, like people were pretty crazy in the 70s.
Well, it's just such, just him being able to bring
capture
that to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just something that I can't even really
imagine. And also, I feel like I just recently watched this, and it's funny because without doing drugs, he definitely puts you in that mentality where you're like, this has tripped me out, dude, and you're not high. You're watching this movie not high, but you're like, and you're like, you're like, man, this movie is I'm so, I could so feel what this guy, when he's like, when he slurs in the bathtub. It's just so effing freaky and
yeah. Well, if anyone can mess with you just through visuals, it's Terry Gilliam.
I feel this, like watching more of his movies, I feel he was the only person who could make this movie into what it is and make it as good as it is, because he just has that imagination and just kind of can step out of the box and say, you know what, this is going to work. Whereas other people will go, I don't know, this is a little too crazy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, again, coming back to Where the Buffalo Roam, where it's the same characters, but just on such a smaller scale without the ability to do kind of go as big and bold as Gilliam goes. I love that movie too, but he just does so much more visually.
Yeah.
I both of your guys' picks were exactly like Dave Fincher. It was the only guy who could have done Fight Club, and I feel like Terry Gilliam is the only guy who could have done Fear and Loathing. Yeah.
Although if they had switched them, I would see those movies too.
I would check that as well. That would be pretty interesting.
That would be the only exception of people.
Well, just because that's what? How would he do that?
Yeah,
I don't even know.
I've always wanted to see that. I've always wanted to see. And the thing is, it would cost too much, and it'd be just for nerds. But take a movie, and then do like an HBO thing where you have like 5-6 different directors do the same script.
Okay.
Like get like, what's his name? The guy who wrote Social Network.
Aaron Sorkin
to write like an awesome little like 45-page script, and then have 5 directors direct this like great script.
That would be interesting.
And just see like their different takes and like, you know, who they cast and stuff.
It also kind of makes me think of The 5 Obstructions. Did you see that? Where Lars von Trier makes the director remake his movie. Like he has him remake different sections of this movie that he had made back in like the 60s or 70s. Like, except, oh, well, now you have to do it like this.
Oh, wow.
You have to do this scene, except now I want you to do it animation. You have to do this scene, but I want you to set it in the worst place on earth. And all these little sort of litmus tests that he gives. Like, oh, you have to meet these requirements and recreate the scene from your movie, but do it this way.
That's pretty interesting. That's pretty good, like, just, like, exercise in filmmaking. Mm-hmm. We should talk after this. good choice.
Have you checked out Gonzo, the documentary?
Yes.
Hunter?
Well, back in the early days of Netflix Instant, they had Gonzo and Buy the Ticket, Take the Ride were both on Instant, and I watched them both one day just because I can never get enough Hunter S. Thompson. I love him. I'm Gonzo for Gonzo.
I really wanted Rum Diary to be good.
So that would have been nice.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. All right, so my number 2 is from 1975, and it's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Ooh.
Another one I had to read for school. This was for my AP Psychology
class. I really
class.
Should have taken honors classes. Shit, I missed out on all the good books.
I did really terrible in this class, but I loved this book. We watched this movie in class too, actually. And I would watch it over and over again. It's so good. Everyone in it is really good. It's one of those that you can just go to like YouTube and just watch a clip and mm-hmm. be okay with it, you know? You can just do that all day long. But was this, how early was this in Jack Nicholson's career?
It wasn't too, I mean, he had
not
done.
Not too early, not but too like early, but pretty.
Yeah, he wasn't that big.
Yeah,
he was before. Like,
this was after 5 Easy Pieces and Easy Rider.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, it's funny, there's a lot of stuff, like B-movie stuff he did with like Coppola that I found. On like,
Corman.
Corman, yeah. Yeah, and so this was, I mean, this was before he kind of broke. I think this broke him. I think this kind of, this and like Easy Rider kind of.
Well, I feel like it was this and 5 Easy Pieces.
5 Easy Pieces. Because
those are the two. Like, whenever I watch one, I want to watch the other one too. I want to do a double feature where I watch both of these movies back to back.
I'm never really disappointed by Jack Nicholson. Another guy who is really, you know, engaging and you mm-hmm. want to, he commands you watch him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. You had to read this book in high school?
Yeah, in AP Psychology.
There was a lot of good books that now.
You had AP Psychology in high school?
Yeah.
What the hell?
I didn't do very well in it.
Man, I just went to a dumb school.
Wait, this was pretty late, actually, because this was after Chinatown and The Last Detail.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
like, King of Marvin Gardens was 1972.
Oh, wow.
5 Easy Pieces was 1970.
Totally.
So, yeah. Totally this was, off. Yeah, oh, wow. This was 5 years after 5 Easy Pieces.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. Some
what's
tribute.
That guy's
somebody,
name? That's
somebody was yelling at us. Brian's like, nyeh.
Yeah, he's like,
nyeh. Yeah, you're wrong.
You guys are wrong about the year.
I wish I was in the show. Brian, I'm talking about you. Brian with a Y. Not our other friend, Brian with an I.
What's that guy's name that's like the really big guy?
Oh, the chief?
The chief?
Yeah. Chief, what's his name?
Chief, that's exactly. Chief, what's his name?
Chief, what's his name?
No, this is a really cool movie. Yeah, this is Milos Forman, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there's also, you got, I'm mumbling over the place here. Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
That's great.
Christopher Lloyd.
Doc Chiavelli.
Doc Brown.
Who's the guy who plays Ratchick or whatever? Like the whiny guy with the glasses. I love him. He's.
Oh.
The one who's always. Cheswick.
Cheswick.
Sidney Lassick. I love him in this movie. He's just such a, he's just got that weird little face, and he's like such a whiny character. I don't know, there's something about Cheswick that I love.
I like to see like them do like a stage reading or something, or videotape some sort of like exercise in filmmaking, and take Danny DeVito now, but he'll do this part as his character in It's Always Sunny.
It's Always Sunny.
And Christopher Lloyd is Doc Brown, and he's there. He's in this because he's crazy. He thinks he can time travel, and then Jack Nicholson as the character in The Departed. So, I want to see that movie.
That'd be really good.
Yeah. So what number were you on?
You're number two.
Oh, number two. Another Johnny Depp movie. This one is from the book Donnie Brasco. I love this movie. I love the book. It's one of those books where I was really into, right before this movie came out, I was really, really into like organized crime and like crime dramas. Mm-hmm. Well, I've always been into that. That's like my type of movie. And I had like read The Godfather, and I read all these books, and someone said, oh, read this book. I think they're going to be making a movie out of it called Donnie Brasco, about this guy who went undercover. And it was one of those books that I remember it was one of the first books I ever read for fun. It wasn't for school. It wasn't for anything. It just like, oh, wow, I'm going to pick it up. It was kind of like the first book I ever read just for the hell of it. And it was really fun. And I was really excited when I got to see the movie and saw the adaptation of it. And it was really, really well done, I thought. And it's basically Joseph D. Pistone, the FBI agent, he goes in undercover to basically take down the mob, and he kind of gets in too deep.
It's always an easy task.
Oh, that's an easy
task.
One man
taking
yeah.
on the mob on his own.
And in the book, it's like, oh, it's going to be, the FBI is always, it's easy, just do this, you know, and, you know, leave your family behind and forget about them and just, you know. And in the book, it goes in depth about how he had to start off, like, at the bottom. Like, he was, like, stealing cars in the beginning, like... The movie kind of starts off where he's kind of like a jeweler, you mm-hmm. know, and that's what he like fences jewels and stuff. And but the book really is detailed because, I mean, the Joseph D. Pistone, the actual guy, wrote it, and he talks about how he like had to steal cars in the beginning. He had to become like a low time crook, and then like literally work his way up. So this took years and years of like him being in that crime world, and I could see how, you know, being doing that for all these years, you wouldn't want, these guys became his friends, you know, like mm-hmm. it's kind of hard, like, hey, I spent years talking to you and I know everything about your life, and now I gotta go testify against you. And
it's you know? Fascinating. Yeah. I mean, even in the movie without oh, yeah. that time yeah. frame set up, it's yeah. just fascinating the relationships that he has and his oh, whole yeah. relationship with Al Pacino.
Yeah.
It's, I do really like this movie.
Yeah, and just
I haven't read the book yet. I would like to read the book.
It's fun read, and it's just psychologically like what's going through your head. Like it just it's kind of,
and then Michael Madsen's the leader, the mob leader.
Sonny Black, yeah.
And who else is on his
Bruno Kirby is in it. Kirby. Yeah, it's funny because
this is the one where they give him the lion or the tiger.
Yeah, yeah,
they as a joke.
Yeah, they think he thinks he's gonna get, you know, he's getting killed,
gonna get whacked, and they give him
and they it's just a birthday surprise. And then he's got to feed this. He's feeding cheeseburgers to the tiger. Yeah, it's a really cool movie. A lot of really good actors. You know, it's kind of, this movie was a first like mob movie that you didn't see like your typical. It wasn't the cast of the Goodfellas, you know, rehashed in this, because a lot of movies were like that. I feel like it was just like, oh, same five actors that you see in every gangster movie. It was kind of like different, like Michael Madsen in it. Like, you know, he hadn't really done that. Well, of course, Al Pacino, you know, but like Bruno Kirby was really cool in it. And so anyway, cool movie and cool book. So that's my number two.
Awesome. Okay. So recap, my number five was American Psycho, four, A Clockwork Orange, three, Trainspotting, two, Fight Club. And my number one is The Shawshank Redemption.
Mm.
I love this movie. And I've read the short story. This is how my mom tried to get me into reading, because she was a huge Stephen King fan. And as my later years in high school went on, I just didn't like to read. So she just started giving me short stories of his to read. And I think I've read a good chunk of his short stories now. And they're all terrific. But this movie is, it just takes a short story and does so much more. And the way Darabont uses music and the actors and all the characters, he packs it full of emotion, and he really just develops this friendship between Andy and Red so well. And that way, when the ending comes about and he's walking on the beach, and it brings a tear to my eye every single time I watch this movie. The cast is great. Everybody in it, Morgan Freeman, Tim Robbins, Bob Gunton as the warden. Who else?
Jeffrey DeMunn.
William Sadler. William Sadler's great. Gil Bellows as Tommy. James Whitmore. I remember watching Asphalt Jungle later on after I'd seen this movie and going, holy crap, that's a young version of James Whitmore. It was just, because I don't think I'd ever really watched anything with James Whitmore in it before. The cast is great. Darabont's direction and just the way he tells the story. And
his writing.
Yeah, the writing. Oh, yeah, his writing is terrific. I mean, anything that he touches is awesome. And I love watching, when this came out, they did like a special edition DVD. I watched all the special features, and there was Darabont talking about he would watch once a week while writing the movie and while shooting the movie, he would watch Goodfellas once a week because when he was writing the movie with all the voiceover, he was a little iffy, and he was like, I don't know about this. People aren't going to like all this voiceover. And then he just kept watching Goodfellas to remind him, you know, voiceover can work if you do it well.
Yeah.
And
then he got the voice of God.
Well, yeah. That helps a little bit.
But, the narrator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the I want to make that movie about Morgan Freeman, the narrator.
The narrator.
It's a movie like about, it's a documentary about narration.
Narrated by Morgan
Freeman. And he narrates. Him narrating.
Yeah, things. I want him narrating.
Yeah.
Video of him being
filmed. This is Morgan Freeman.
Something else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see it's starting off slow, and they're showing him sitting in the booth, and it's getting set up before he starts reading his lines. Really, that's how the opening of the movie starts.
And he like the type of tea he has, and he's like, it's a special blend flown in from Thailand, you know. And he gets really emotional.
There's a little subplot that I went running the whole time about the people farming the
black tea in Thailand. Yeah, yeah. And then he puts on
that he's also narrating.
He puts on his reading glasses, and then he kind of like, he's like, just give me a moment. And he takes 10 minutes and kind of centers himself.
Yeah.
I've got to take his tea. I've got to get busy living.
That was pretty good. This movie, like I said, on any given day, this list would change. On any given day, my top 20 movies of favorite movies of all time changes. But this would always kind of float around there. It's just such a well-made movie. And there's not a bad thing about it. There's not a bad... Like, there's nothing... I've never seen anybody nitpick at The Shawshank Redemption.
Well, I feel like this is the ultimate... Anytime it's on, wherever it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody will watch it.
Yeah.
Like, this is a movie that my dad will watch over and over and over again. So that says something about it to me.
Yeah, it's bad. If I'm flipping through channels and I see it's on, I'm like, no, don't stop there, because then you're just going to end up watching all the way through.
Yeah.
And I end up doing it because it's Shawshank Redemption, and I end up watching it all the way through and go, oh, well, I had things to do. And I just, that's cool. I can do it 2 hours later.
Yeah.
I didn't actually know that this was Stephen King until it was in that Family Guy episode with the Stephen King movie. I had no idea this was a Stephen King. It doesn't seem Stephen King.
It doesn't.
There's a lot of movies that you're like, this, like Stand By Me. You're like, this was Stephen King.
And those are short stories. His short stories are different than
normal. And he's just such a prolific writer. But I also, another thing making fun of him on Family Guy when they're talking about it's about this lamp. And it comes to life. It's like, are you even trying anymore? I still love Stephen King.
Yeah.
I haven't, fortunately for making this list easier, I haven't read Shawshank Redemption or Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption yet, which I love that original title. Not that Shawshank Redemption is a bad title. But I hadn't read the story yet, so it's not on my list. I feel like I haven't, I'm saving it for something.
Yeah.
I don't know what, but I'm saving it for something big.
The day of your wedding night?
Yeah.
Yep. That's it.
He's like, now I can sit down and read this.
He's all, honey. Sit down. I'm going to read you the Shawshank.
I meant the movie for a list. I was saying. But that works too. Like first book I read, my first son or something.
Yeah. Yeah, but you got to read it in the Morgan Freeman voice.
Yeah.
But really good pick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my recap. Number five, also a Darabont adaptation of a Stephen King story, The Mist. Mm-hmm. Number four, Children of Men. Number three, Malcolm X. Number two, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And number one, which I'm probably going to get shit for, Factotum from 2005. Hmm. It's based on a Charles Bukowski book. I love Charles Bukowski.
I love Bukowski.
Have you seen this?
I haven't, because another guy who I work with who loves Bukowski is like, don't do it. Don't watch it. And I love Factotum. I love the book.
Oh, I love this movie. Really? I think, well, okay, again, it depends on your perception of Bukowski. Like, have you seen Born Into This?
I keep like needing to watch it, but I haven't. I'm just gonna lend you all
my Bukowski movies.
Okay.
Because I've got Born Into This, and I've got Factotum, and I've got the Bukowski tapes, and I've got Barfly, and you can just watch them all.
Okay.
And like, so there's Mickey Rourke's interpretation of Charles Bukowski in Barfly, which is very broad and kind of over the top and loud and brash and big. And then there's Bukowski himself, who's like this very, like, yeah, he gets loud when he gets drunk, but he's like this very, like, I'm down here and like a mumbly. And he's kind of got a surprisingly effeminate voice. Like, he's not as low as you would think. He's a little bit more of a tenor, I guess you would call it. And Matt Dillon just captures Bukowski so perfectly to me. So much, like, as much as I enjoy Barfly, Matt Dillon becomes Bukowski more than Mickey Rourke is, like, playing Bukowski. It's weird. And there's just so much, as like Barbet Schroeder, he did Barfly, and I do like Barfly, and it's got a style to it, but there's this more subtle dive bar feel to Factotum, where it's dirtier and it's not as broad and it's smaller and more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels more like you're in that world with him.
Okay.
And I just love Bukowski. I love this movie. I love this book. Lily Taylor's great. Fisher Stevens plays one of his friends at the bicycle shop that he goes to, he goes to the track with.
Okay.
Who else? Marissa Tomei. It's just a great movie. And it's this guy, Bent Hamer. He's a... I always mix up Norwegian, some Norse, Norwegian, Swedish, one of those folk. And this is the only movie of his that I've seen, but I want to see more stuff because he's got this very interesting feel to the movie. And I just love it. And I can watch this movie anytime. Like, I went and saw it. No one wanted to go see it with me when it came out in theaters. I was living in San Diego, and it was down like downtown San Diego, so I had to drive 40 minutes by myself to go see this movie. And I wanted to go again the next night.
Wow.
Now I have to check it out.
Yeah.
Well, I will lend it to you. Okay. Well, again, I feel like I'm building it up so much, but I'm just that big of a Bukowski. I feel like my fondness for Bukowski.
Women is one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah.
I love them. It's a great book.
I think that's all we have to say about that.
Yeah. No, I have to see that movie. Oh, yeah. Jenny, take us to your number one.
All right. So my number five was Lord of the Flies. 4, To Kill a Mockingbird. 3, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. 2, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And my number one is from 1983, and it's The Outsiders.
Honorable mention.
I just literally took it out of my list.
Oh, really?
Before we started, yeah.
This was one of the very first books that I ever read on my own. Not having to be an assignment, just wanting to read it.
This was
one of the first ones that
I'm surprised you didn't read it for English class.
Well, I might have had to have read it for... I feel like I might have read it before it was made to be a requirement.
Okay.
So I don't think I read it again by any means, but...
You know, I don't read twice.
But yeah, I think I read it beforehand. I think I read it before I saw the movie too, but like knowing who was in the movie, because I was such a little... I loved all these guys back then when I was in, you know, middle school and high school.
I don't know who didn't love these guys.
Right?
Yeah.
Gotta do it for Johnny.
So, yeah. And so I think that helped me read it, too, because it, like, I put all these characters in the place of the people, too. And then I saw the movie, and it's a really good movie. It's got, I mean, so many great people in it. Matt Dillon, Ralph Macchio. I can never say
Macchio.
Patrick Swayze, Rob Lowe, Emilia Estevez, Tom Cruise, Diane Lane, Leif Garrett, Tom Waits is in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always forget that he's in it. I need to watch this movie again.
I like The Outsiders, but I prefer Rumblefish.
I like the director's cut of Outsiders more than the longer, because the theatrical version, they cut out a lot.
Okay, but you're not talking about the novelization version of it.
The novelization version of it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that I felt like... It just, it just got too long for me.
See, I love the novelization version.
See, I bought that one. I bought that version. And then I watched it. I'm like, what the F? Like, is this kind of going in a weird... It just... I was so used to the original one. That's the thing. That's my thing. That I it makes much more sense, the novelized version. But I was just so used to the original one that it just where it's like quick and fun and fast.
The one that opens up with Matt Dillon going, where they're like, what are we going to do? Nothing legal.
Yeah. Nothing legal, man.
Hell yeah. I don't think I've seen the extended version. I think I've only seen the original.
Yeah. He's like, we got two more guys in the back seat. I pity the back seat.
And they filmed these back to back. They filmed Outsiders and the Rumblefish back to back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Both S.E. Hinton novels. I just like, I don't know, something about the weird artsy black and white of Rumblefish and then the weirder characters, Mickey Rourke playing Motorcycle Boy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's I don't know. I think it's the whole cast of this one that as an ensemble cast that I really love this movie. Me too.
Yeah. It's an interesting, I feel like I've heard stories about certain people not getting along.
Well, yeah, it's funny.
They had to stay separate. They didn't room together. So
it was all Coppola.
The greasers would sleep together and the socias would sleep together and they wouldn't socialize at all.
And it's funny, there's really great special features in the novelization version where they talk about this and all the clashes on set was because of Coppola. He created that.
Oh.
He would feed the socias better food.
Yeah.
And he would let them have longer breaks. And the greasers, he would give like crappy food to. And they'd have their hotels was like shitty hotels. Like they didn't sleep in the same, you know. And he would like start up like, who can do the most push-ups here? And he would start competitions just so they would like rile each other up.
Oh,
and,
directors playing mind games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coppola.
And in the special DVD, special edition, you have people auditioning for parts that you're like, what the hell? This person auditioned for it? Because it was back when like VHS tapes, I think, maybe not even VHS, videotapes were in, and they recorded everything on video.
Okay.
So all the auditions were done like a play. So it'd be like, Emilio, come up. Charlie Sheen, you do a scene with Emilio here. And it was kind of like a film play, and he would take people from – so it was a soundstage filled with actors. The audition was just a huge audition. And he'd like cherry pick, okay, you play Johnny and you play blah, blah, blah. And you see all these actors that you know like just like playing off each other. And it's really fun and really cool like to see that experiment in auditioning.
I need to watch that.
Yeah. Really cool.
That's good stuff. I mean, the fact that he removed the side of a house to do it one shot is amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, everybody in this is pretty amazing. And
it's a good one.
Yeah. All right. My number one recap. My number five was Jurassic Park. Four was First Blood. Three was The Bourne Identity. Two was Donnie Brasco. And my number one is, I feel like I've talked more about the books than I have about the movies in this list. But The Most Dangerous Game, short story.
Okay.
I love the short story. It was written in 1924. And I remember reading it for an English class as well.
Yeah,
and,
so did I.
And being like, whoa, this dude's hunting.
Yeah.
They're hunting a dude?
He's hunting humans.
Yeah.
How are we allowed to read this?
Yeah, like, whoa, we're going to – it's a requirement. I read this. The short story about
Excuse
hunting
me, teacher,
men.
Do you know what this is about?
Yeah. That was my thing. Like,
yeah,
that was kind of what started sparking like me loving reading, just because
what grade was this though?
This was early.
This was like grade school. He was reading like fifth grade.
This was
because middle schoolers are having teachers read Hunger Games.
Yeah, that's
to
true.
Them
that's
now,
true.
So.
That's true. I don't remember what year what.
I don't remember.
Yeah, either. It was before high school. But I remember
probably
being,
middle school. Is what
yeah,
I was thinking.
Yeah, because Outsiders what for me was middle school.
Yeah,
I had to read it from middle school, and sense. I was like, "Whoa, there's people killed. This is amazing." And then being like, "Well, wait a minute, there's a movie about this too. What? People killing people for sport?" And I remember when
it's called Running Man.
Yeah, and then discovering movies, and then like, wait a minute, Van Damme's gonna do a movie. It's called and John Woo. What? And then like being disappointed. After But so basically, it's about this guy. They're from New York, and there's all these aristocrats in this boat. And he falls off the boat. They're on a safari in, I think it's Africa. I want to say Africa or South America. And then they have to go. He falls off the boat and they start hunting him. And he becomes the game. And it is an awesome movie. And there's been so many movies based on this. There was an Ice-T movie.
Surviving the Game.
Hard Target. But the best one, I think, being the original black and white, The Most Dangerous Game, which came out in 1932, which is on Criterion. Yeah. but yeah, it's just such a cool book. And that first movie was pretty amazing. But yeah, you've seen many different versions of this. The Pest, I think we talked about. yeah. So check it out. Read, and it's such a short read, and it's fun. And this is a movie where I'd like to make it as remake this movie, but the original movie as a period piece and stuff. It's just such a cool story.
Well, then you also don't have to worry about cell phones and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. Or GPS. Or yeah,
I lost my signal.
Yeah. So that was it for the list, and now we're gonna go do our honorable mentions, right?
Yeah. Let's do it,
Kevin.
Okay, so I have The Prestige.
Ooh.
Have you read that? I've heard that the book is really good.
I haven't read it. Empire of the Sun, Little Children, The Outsiders, and Blade Runner.
Okay. I haven't read any of those, I don't think.
Blade Runner, the short story. That's the only one
I've read.
I haven't
read much Philip K. Dick. I think I've read A Scanner Darkly, and that's it.
Okay.
Speaking of which, Total Recall, new trailer came out today. What was the name of that? That story was Will Help You
Remember Something.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, honorable mentions.
I left all the great, alone. What's the author we're talking about?
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Dick. Fuck, I'm bumbling. just him really alone. Hard. Just him alone.
He's had a lot of
so many effing
iRobot.
Well, you don't. Well, you're like what?
No. I wrote up as Isaac
author.
Asimov.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that I read that just recently, and that's so cool. And they it up.
The book's good though.
Yeah, because it's a courtroom.
It's completely
thing.
Different.
Really?
Yes.
Wait, iRobot is?
Yeah.
It's a courtroom drama.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
With robots.
And the robots don't kill humans because they're programmed.
Yeah.
Not to.
So imagine like a John Grisham.
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
Another author who's got plenty of movies based on his books. Yeah. But between like what John Grisham, Stephen King,
Robert Ludlum,
who I feel like Stephen King's a big one. Though.
James Patterson.
Okay.
Tom Clancy.
Tom Clancy. Yeah. I was surprised you didn't have a Tom Clancy.
I know. I'm really
surprised
too.
I have all four here. Oh. Honorable mention.
Okay.
It was hard to pick one.
All right. So I've got Wonder Boys, which I love. Michael Chabon. Naked Lunch. I love Naked Lunch. That's just such a trippy movie. I haven't watched it in a while, though. Henry and June. High Fidelity. Of Mice and Men. Lolita. And then I'm getting to the movies, and I'm just like, I've had these movies on so many lists now, I feel like I can't do them again. The Princess Bride, The Exorcist, and Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fight Club was an honorable mention. Carrie and The Shining. Unbearable Lightness of Being, and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You just... Oh, crap. I was going to say something about something you just... Michael Chabon.
Yes.
There's a script out there for the first Spider-Man that he wrote.
Really?
That's pretty good. I think I might have it.
Don't doubt. I mean,
yeah, it was really good, but it was really, like, fucking long.
I'm still waiting for The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay to become a movie. Or The Escapist.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just a great writer, period. Yeah. Jenny?
Oh, okay. Honorable mentions, Midsummer Night's Dream, and Romeo and Juliet, just because they're plays. I didn't put them down as books because they're kind of plays, but I still read them. 12 Angry Men, High Fidelity, and Bridget Jones's Diary. Actually, the book is really good. It's another one where it's all written in English and they say crazy things that you gotta
like the vernacular.
Learn.
I didn't do any plays or comics because I figured this could be separate.
That could be
totally separate. Yeah. I could have gone just on William Shakespeare alone. We could do it.
I really considered doing Hamlet for a little while. Yeah. I considered doing Hamlet.
Well, it's funny because I forgot who was. I was listening. I went to a Q&A, I think, with John Logan, one of those big the writers that like writing big movies. Yes, it was. I think it was right before he was doing Coriolanus. And he was talking about, do you guys hear something on your headphones? Like someone singing?
It sounds like someone's listening to hymns in the other room.
That's weird.
Michelle and her hymns.
Yeah. Oh, Michelle and Penny hymning away. and he was talking about how someone asked him, like, what's the best thing to study? Like, what pieces of literature are the best things to study? He's like, well, a lot of people will say, like, read, you know, like Casablanca or Butch Cassidy, you know, and all these things. But he's like, go to the original source. Go to the best writer of all time. Go to William Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how, because he wrote Any Given Sunday, how he's like, the kernel of the idea was I forgot what Shakespeare play he took that from, that idea.
There's so many movies that have taken stuff from Shakespeare.
I know, and I think it was, I'm blanking on what Shakespeare one he took.
Titus.
No, it was...
It could be.
No, it wasn't Titus. It was something with an H. I'm thinking it's something with an H. But anyway, he's like, I took the kernel of the idea from a Shakespeare play, and then I set it in Hamlet. The NFL world. I said it in the NFL world. But yeah, so it just, that's another thing where I'm like, whenever I'm like, I need to read something to inspire me, I'm like, wow, Shakespeare, I forgot.
Yeah.
But here are my honorable mentions. Paul 13, right? Minority Report, anything, Philip K. Dick. Trainspotting was on there. Remo Williams, the book.
That was a book?
Yeah. it was one of those like fun adventure, like 80s books.
Like a choose your own adventure?
No.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was just like a cheesy like adventure book that I'd like to remake Remo Williams. Blade Runner, I guess I said that right. Out of Sight. The James Bond books. I mean, the book that became, that would spawn that was, you know, it's amazing. Patriot Games, anything Tom Clancy. The book that inspired Alive, the movie. The Survivors of the Andes.
Oh, okay.
Which I think would make a really great miniseries because the movie it's an abridged version of what happened. It makes it feel like it was like a couple weeks, but they were there for like 3 months. Like they were out there for 3 months. Do you know the story?
Alive?
Yeah.
I remember watching parts of the movie through my fingers.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Something about that movie. What year did the movie come out? About being on a plane that crashes and people eating people kind of scared me.
That's understandable.
Yeah. That movie has such great cast.
It was 93.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was 10 when this came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would scare the hell out of a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Didn't it turn out that if they'd just gone the other way, there was a resort right there?
Yeah.
Insult to injury.
I know. They went the long way in the wrong direction. So it took them like five times the distance to get there. Where if they would have gone the other way, it was like miles or something.
We're skiing. Yeah. We got blow.
Yeah.
Two kinds of snow. I'm on this weird mountain cape right now. Actually, I'm reading this book, End of Thin Air, by John Krakauer.
It's a good book.
Who wrote Into the Wild.
Oh, wow.
About this doomed trek up to the top of Mount Everest in 1996. And it's just trippy. I'm obsessed with obsession right now. And like that whole climbing Everest obsession is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to see because they did a made-for-TV movie of Into Thin Air. I would like to see a theatrical movie.
They also did, because the reason I read, somebody gave me the book, is they did like an IMAX film, but it was more like a documentary about that instance, about those people.
Well, Everest IMAX. Well,
maybe it's that.
Because they're following one group, and the group that gets stranded is on the mountain while they're following the group
that Everest is
about. Which was weird, because I had started watching it at the same time. I was like, oh, well, don't spoil. I'm reading the book. Don't tell me what happened.
Yeah, I do like that. Like when people are obsessed with things, and you're like, why are you obsessed with things? Like that, I think that's why Howard Hughes. I'm like a big Howard Hughes fanatic, just because like, he was obsessed. Well,
I just see Ricardo's locked himself in his screening room, and he's just watching The Aviator over and over again, and he keeps telling me to come in with the milk.
Yeah. That's another book that that's another thing. It's funny that I'm obsessed with Howard Hughes.
Yeah,
that's so weird.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like I've been so obsessed with all these obsessed people, and it's just this weird self-fulfilling cycle. It's bizarre to me, but
obsessing,
I can't help
about
it.
Obsession.
Yeah.
Yeah. Howard Hughes, bisexual, by the way.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
He dated a very famous movie star.
Cary Grant.
Yes. I think, it was Cary Grant. I was thinking with Spencer Tracy, but you're right, it was Cary Grant. Cary Grant.
Well, I knew they were friends, but I didn't know they did anything beyond that.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. Oh, and anything Elmer Leonard.
Anything Elmer Leonard?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Elmer Leonard.
There's so many things being adapted from his books.
Like that Justified? Are
good. Yes.
Justified. Or Out of Sight. Or then you have some bad things. Like
Jackie Black Brown.
Dahlia. Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown, yeah.
Wait, hold on. I think there's... Black Dahlia is not Elmer Leonard. That's James... That's the guy that did...
James L...
James Elroy.
Elroy, yeah.
You did LA Confidential.
You're right. That's right. That's right.
And then Elmer Leonard did Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
And 52 Pickup and...
Yeah.
All that jazz.
You're right.
No, I mean, not
that movie.
Not
that movie. Et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is... See, there's so many things we could have done. This is going to spawn other lists because, again, we could do plays or we could do... Anyway. You could find... Is that it?
I think that's it.
Yeah. So let's wrap it up. So you could find us on the interwebs at... thelistsfilmpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at thefilmpodcast. Yeah.
Nice.
See how I stumbled and then I saved it at the end.
Boom.
And then you could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERES.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
I'm at Adam Scott. It's an _ Adam Scott.
And I'm at KZuberBeer. That's ZUBERBIER.
Yeah.
And then I'm also at shootingthescript.com. This is the website where I write reviews with our sometimes guest, Brian with a Y, Barrel. I'm also writing for MoviePass now, which I'm allowed to say. So that's pretty awesome because I love MoviePass. And I love to write.
Nice.
And I feel like I'm going all NPR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now this recipe for the sweaty family balls.
And it's funny. I went to MoviePass, their blog, and I started reading something. And I get to the bottom, and you had written it, and I'm like, oh man, I know this guy. And then I realized that nobody was near me to listen to that, to me saying I know this guy. So I felt very stupid. So anyway, that's it. You could find us on Facebook, like us. If you like the podcast, tell a friend. We'd like more listeners.
Oh, and there's that Amazon thing.
There is the Amazon thing that I haven't posted yet. It will be. I promise. It will be hosted by the time this airs. So if you are going to buy anything off Amazon, go through our link on our website and then do so through that. It won't cost you anything more. Just Amazon will give us a piece of their pie.
And they have a mighty big pie.
They have a mighty big pie, yeah. So do that. Do us that favor. And it doesn't literally, it takes an extra second to go through us. And literally, if you go through us, once you click on our link, and it gets to you to Amazon, just bookmark that. And every time you shop on Amazon, they'll kick us a couple of shekels our way. So there you go. If you want to help us out, if you like this, it's a free podcast. Come on, guys.
If you don't want to help us out, you should also click on that link too.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're anti-helping us out.
Click on that link and then tell Amazon how much you don't like
us. Yeah, like, these guys are dicks. So anyway, until next time, have a good week.